How can you rock your way into business? Welcome to Venture Voice, show number 19. I'm Greg Gallant, and today I interview Derek Sivers, the founder, president, and programmer of CD Baby. Derek's original ambition was simple. He wanted to sell his band CD on the web. When he found out no music store would let him because his band didn't have a label, he built his own music store on the web and named it CD Baby. Today, CD Baby has $25 million in sales. Nowadays, it's hard to find an independent musician who doesn't know about CD Baby. As Derek points out, his company is now the largest distributor of digital music on the web. But if you're not in the music business, you might not have heard of Derek, even though Derek's an old gun in online business. He started his business in 1997. But during the high-flying dot-com days, Derek wasn't taking venture capital money in expensive office space in San Francisco. He might have named his business CD Baby, but he never played the dot-com poster child. He located his business in Portland, Oregon, and focused on shipping CDs. Today, he takes a break from business to chat with us. And as a bonus, stay tuned till the end of the show to hear us play some of Derek's own music. Enjoy. All right, well, Derek, welcome to Venture Voice.
Thanks.
So tell me a little bit about what your career was like before CD Baby.
Before CD Baby, I've been a musician my whole life. It's all I wanted to do, and all I did do. I went straight from high school into Berklee College of Music in Boston. I was there 87 through 90. Graduated Berklee College, got a job at Warner Brothers in New York City. I was working inside the music industry just enough to know that I didn't like that side of things. It was a great job, but just depressing to see how the big, giant music industry works at that level, where you'd see amazing albums get completely shelved and ignored just because, you know, Janet Jackson was coming out with an album that same month, and the budget only allowed them to promote Janet's album, so this amazing, brilliant album just got shelved, you know, pressed 1,000 copies, took no promotion, and just shelved it because Janet was a priority, and it just kind of, you know, made me cringe enough that I quit my job in good terms in 1992, and I've just been a full-time musician ever since, living in New York, just kind of doing the musician entrepreneur thing of just whatever it takes to make a buck as a musician, producing people's records, playing on people's records, going on tour. 1996 or so, I had actually even bought a house with the money I made touring. Like, I was really kind of living the dream of a self-employed musician, you know? I was doing it. I was just been a full-time musician for all those years. And around 1996, I put out my own CD, sold 1,500 copies at concerts and stuff, and I went to go sell it online because I was doing a radio promotion campaign where we were getting little pockets of airplay in Alaska and New Mexico and Michigan and Arizona, and we were living in New York City, and there was just no way we were going to be able to play those places. And I was enjoying the do-it-yourself route. You know, I didn't want to get a record deal, but I did want to get it up and selling online. So here's the funny thing. It's like, in hindsight, it's funny to think it was only a few years ago that there was literally not a single place that would sell your CD if you didn't have a record deal or distribution deal. So in 1996, 97, I was trying to find anybody who would sell my CD, but every online record store would say the same thing, which is just, well, who's your distributor? And when I said, well, I don't have a distributor, they'd say, well, sorry, kid, you know, this is just the front end of the distributors. Like, the only way something gets into our store is by being in the distributor's database. And I said, well, come on, can't I just mail you a box of CDs and you just put it up on your site and sell them and pay me? And they just laughed, you know, it doesn't work that way. So I decided to just not start a business, but I decided to just put a shopping cart on my own band's website. Back in 1997, again, this was much harder than it was now. There was no PayPal back then, you know, and the only shopping cart scripts were some crazy CGI bin Perl scripts, and I wasn't coming from a computer-savvy background, so I just started kind of trying to squint at some books on how to put in a CGI bin shopping cart Perl script into my website, and spent about $1,000 in setup fees and 3 months of red tape to get myself a credit card merchant account. But 3 months and $1,000 later, I got my credit card merchant account with a shopping cart. And it was so much work that when I was done, I told some of my friends in bands that, hey man, if you want, you can sell your CD on my site, because that sucked. That was really, really hard to do. So if every musician had to go through that, that would be hell. So just feel free to use this stuff that I've already built. And still, it wasn't meant to be a business. I was just kind of doing a favor for some friends. And that grew through word of mouth. I started getting calls from strangers, you know, like friends of friends, asking if I could sell their CD on my band's website. And finally, it got to be so many that I took these other 12 bands off of my own website and put them on a separate website that was kind of intended to be a store. And that was CD Baby. And it was still never really meant to be a business. You know, I was still just doing this as a hobby. You got to remember, I was making my full-time living, still touring, producing people's records, running a recording studio, running a booking agency, just kind of living the life of a full-time musician. And CD Baby was just some little hobby that I was just kind of doing on weekends. But friends told friends, and word of mouth grew, and now CD Baby's the largest seller of independent CDs on the web, with over 100,000 artists using it and 25 million in sales.
Cool. Now, let me just jump back in your career here. You made it as a musician in New York. A lot of people don't. A lot of them end up being waiters or doing a day job and hoping to play at night. What do you think made you successful at that? Was it just the quality of your music, or was it something else that you did?
I think it's a matter of being versatile in your musical skill. I mean, there's some people that are just like amazing bass players, and that's all they know how to do is to kind of play the bass really well. And even that, you can make a living doing it if you're smart and you're persistent, and if you know how to turn on your extroverted side, even if you're not that way by nature, but you know how to turn it on for practical use. But I think that definitely the thing that helped me is that I went to music school and I learned how to do lots of things. So I had this business card that, you know, would say guitar, bass, keyboards, drums, producing, engineering, whatever. I was in a circus for 10 years. I would play classical piano at a mime show. I would play, you know, disco guitar on a dance song, and then go on a tour with a Japanese pop star. So it's just kind of like, you know, whatever it took to make a living, I would do it. But I was also very, you know, very driven and ambitious. I mean, the job I had at Warner Brothers was very comfortable. I quit on purpose to force myself to make a living doing music, and have been doing it ever since.
And where do you think your ambition to sell came from? I mean, it sounds like this was hard work coming from being a musician and dealing with setting up websites back in the early days of the web. What drove you to spend those 3 months setting this thing up?
I don't think anything's been hard work. I saw a quote that said it really well once. It said something like, find a job that you really love and you'll never work a day in your life. And, you know, what it means is just like, when you're doing something you really love, it's just nothing seems like work. You know, you're just kind of following your muse, just following whatever interests you. To me, the excitement has always been about the learning. That's why, you know, when you asked my title, I call myself president and programmer these days, because after starting CD Baby, or kind of in the process of starting CD Baby, I really didn't know hardly anything about computers. I just knew some real stupid basic HTML markup. Never took a programming class or anything like that. But as CD Baby grew, I really kind of got fascinated in learning how I could make my own job easier through automating things. And I learned about server-side databases like MySQL, and I learned about server-side scripting languages like PHP, and had the ultimate inspiration to learn these things, because every time I learned how to automate something I was doing manually, I was making my job a hell of a lot easier. So, you know, for the first year of CD Baby, it was just me. I didn't really even hire my first employee until a year later. So even once we had employees, it was constantly me trying to find a way to make their job easier so that I wouldn't need to keep hiring more people. Instead, I could find technical ways of doing what we do more efficiently so that I wouldn't need to keep hiring more and more people.
So what's an example of just something that was a real pain in the butt to do and that you automated?
Oh, man, there are so many. We just, you know, if you were to see this giant, like, factory-type setup we have now where it's, like, 50 employees in a big airplane hangar-sized warehouse, John was the first guy I ever hired, like, back in 99. John and I still tell people that kind of, you know, like the grandparents saying, I used to walk 7 miles through the snow. We say, you know, every order used to come in just by email. And although I was running a database, it was FileMaker Pro. It was like just this kind of little, you know, application on your Mac. And so every order would just come in sent to me by email. And I would have to highlight the mouse over the first name, click copy, alt tab, into FileMaker, click paste. Highlight my mouse over the last name, click copy, alt tab, click into the last name, hit paste. Highlight my mouse over the address line 1, hit copy, alt tab, FileMaker, click paste. We'd have to do that for every single order. that came in. And I mean, granted, it was only like 5 or 10 orders a week, you know. So, but even when, I think we did that up until it was still like, I think even when it was like 30 orders a day, we were still importing them by hand. It was like you just spend an hour in the email box importing the day's orders into the database. And, you know, things like that. I mean, it really down to the very bottom level. Though I know this might be a little early to transition to a related topic here, but it's one of the things I tell people that are starting new companies. We get contacted all the time by people that are saying, hey, man, I'm thinking of starting, you know, like a music recommendation service or something like that. And every now and then people ask my advice. And one of the main bits of advice I give people is, I say, like, just give yourself a 10-day deadline and just launch it. Just whip it up in 10 days and just do it with almost no features. Don't do a coming soon that sits there for a year while you try to perfect this thing. Just whip up something quick and ugly in a week or two with no money and just start doing it, even if you only have one client and one customer, and then just improve on it from there. Because I see too many people that get paralyzed into thinking, oh, God, we're going to need $10 million in venture capital and make this thing perfect. We're going to have to get a team of 20 engineers to make the most amazing software ever. And they just get, you know, they sit in development for a year, and meanwhile, well, they spent that year in hiding. The world has changed around them, and the idea that they had a year ago might not be so happening, you know, a year later. But I really think that there's a huge advantage to just kind of slapping something up quickly and getting feedback from the world and improving it from there. Also, it helps you if the world is not into your idea. You'll know it a lot earlier before you spent $10 million.
It sounds like you really know your stuff on business now, but you started CD Baby as your first business and you didn't go to business school or anything. From your life running a band, did you notice that running a band was at all like running a business, or was it a totally new game?
Before the band, I started in the circus, where it was actually really good training that I had a boss that was just an idiot. That actually really helped, because he was like the boss of the circus that would book all the gigs, but he was like some kind of, you know, forgetful Mr. Magoo that just, you know, didn't know where anything was, and he'd say, oh, you guys are booked in Albany, New York this weekend. I forget, it's either Saturday or Sunday, and I don't know which time, so just drive to Albany this weekend and drive around. Hopefully you'll find the gig. You know, seriously, like, that's not an exaggeration. That kind of stuff would happen all the time. So it made me, at the age of 18, have to be like the responsible one in the circus that would drive the truck, make sure it had gas, you know, call the agent, I mean, call the person who booked us, even though it wasn't my job to do so. I kind of had to step into the role of responsibility because I had a flaky boss. So it's kind of, even at the age of 18 in the circus, if you were to see the way the thing ran, it would kind of felt like I was the guy running it, you know, just out of necessity. So then when I started a band when I was like 22 or something, I was already kind of used to being the responsible one. You know, the rest of the musicians would kind of flake, people would show up, people would quit, people would have personality problems, and I was the one kind of ambitiously holding the whole thing together, I guess because it was my music too, and I really wanted to get my music out to the world, so I had more inspiration than anybody to be the one to make this thing happen. So then when, you know, 6 years later I'm starting a company, it felt like anything else. I've been very used to the role, and I joke sometimes about, like, when people ask me if it's weird to be the boss, I say, well, you know, I've been boss since I was 18, so I'm used to it. You know, I guess I'm just usually the least slacker-like one in the crowd.
So I guess that's something necessary in music and business, to be the least, have one person not being a total slacker.
Yeah, and understand, you know, a lot of it is, I mean, I read a hell of a lot. I mean, I just devour books on music. I'm so used to saying music before the word business. I devour books on business strategy, whether it's the more kind of management stuff like Peter Drucker, or, you know, I forget the name of the author that wrote Good to Great, Jim Collins, Good to Great, or whether it's the marketing angle ones like the Guerrilla Marketing series or Seth Godin stuff or stuff like that. Like, I've always just been a real fan of business books because I saw how they could apply to even what a band or a booking agency or a recording studio was doing. I think it's a shame, actually, that a lot of people in music only read music business books, and they don't understand that reading a book like Good to Great or anything by Seth Godin or J. Conrad Levinson or whatever can really help them with what they do, even though the book was not about music.
It seems to be a big part of the culture in the music industry, or a big part of the culture of the musicians, to have that view, like, where, you know, we're not corporate, we're kind of rocking, we're rebelling here. How do you kind of reconcile that, like, reading these business books and being a musician? Is there any contradictions there in the culture?
Not at all, man. I mean, I think everything I do is about rebellion. I mean, CD Baby is a total rebellion against the traditional world of distribution. And, you know, me being the only musician in a crowd that's into reading a book on marketing is somewhat of a rebellion against the, you know, the people that I was surrounded with that just wanted to, like, watch TV and get high and hang out and whatever. And I'm the one going, no, man, we got to work, you know. So I'm always just rebelling against whatever is around me. I mean, CD Baby is a perfect example of that. That, you know, before 1998, the world was just set up in a way that the only way a musician could get distribution is by signing their music over to a record label, like just giving up the rights completely to a record label, or at best case, signing a distribution deal, which is still an awful deal. And distribution deals were notorious for never paying. You know, they give you about a 2 or 3 month window to prove your sales, and if you're not selling well, they kick you out forever. And it's also, you know, that whole world is just filled with the whole kind of pay-to-play mentality, where just, you know, anyone who has the money can come on and kind of buy up the space and drown out the people that don't have money. So CD Baby was really set up as a rebellion against all of that. So when I realized, you know, I told you that point where I took these 12 artists that were on my band's website and put it on its own separate website. So when I realized that, like it or not, I was starting a business, I decided to make the very core of the business itself a kind of idealistic rebellion against traditional distribution. And I decided to kind of rethink what a distribution deal would look like from a musician's point of view. And it went like this. It was like, number one, I want to be paid every single week, no matter what. Number two, I want to know the full name and address of everybody who buys my CD. Because in my mind, those are my fans, not the store's fans. You know, they're not a fan of the store. They're a fan of me that was just using the store to get me. So I should be able to know who they are. Number three, I'll never be kicked out for not selling enough. So even if I'm making some kind of obscure tuba classical music that's only going to appeal to one person every year, that the perfect distribution would keep that one copy there for the one person a year that wanted it. And number four, there would never be any paid placement. It wouldn't be filled with advertisements paid for by the people with money. It wouldn't be, there'd be no buying of chart space where the people with money get the top results. That kind of stuff is just never fair to those that can't afford it. So the perfect distribution system would just never allow that kind of stuff. And those were my four idealistic points on starting CD Baby. And all of that, I think, is just a real rebellion against the traditional system. Still, even, honestly, man, even the way that we run the company internally is rebellion against the way that most companies are run.
Yeah, I was looking at your website, and I see that people have titles. I mean, there's a VP of operations, but there's also account warehouse, a kicking, screaming, gold teeth, the extreme professor. How do you kind of come up with building a business in this unconventional way? It's hard enough to build a business in a conventional way.
You know, when I was six, I lived in England for a year, and there was the school I went to there was just awful. You realize, like, why, you know, if you ever saw Pink Floyd, The Wall, you know, they're just, like, railing against the British school system. And so I was there in this, like, British school system at the age of six, and I remember that there was, like, a kid who brought orange juice one day and spilled it, and the teachers yelled, "There will be no more orange juice for the rest of the year!" And then one day some kid, you know, brought a tomato and dropped it on the floor and stepped on it and made a mess, and they said, "There will be no more tomatoes for the rest of the year." And as the year went on, they just, like, started just banning everything that ever caused any kind of a problem. And I kind of feel that a lot of businesses are run like that. Like, because somebody once 2 years ago stole a file, they put some, you know, hyper-paranoid restrictions on all employees that no employees are allowed to hereby forthwith allow to look to the right when entering door C. And they just impose all these stupid restrictions just because of one little problem in the past. And you realize that most of that stuff isn't necessary. You know, you don't punish everybody because one person fucked up. And so honestly, I mean, the joke is that CD Baby is run with all of the corporate formality of Bob and Jimmy's Tackle Shop in Key Largo. You know, you realize that there are plenty of little bait shops in the Florida Keys that seem to stay in business just fine, even though they're run by a bunch of slackers. So if we can do anything a step better than that, it's good enough. You know, I'm sure we could probably be a little more profitable if we were to really buckle down and create some kind of super strict environment that everybody hated, but would drive them like workhorses or whatever. But, you know, you just realize that there's a quality of life factor and a happiness factor in there, too, that I'd rather do something that makes me feel proud and happy and surrounded by proud and happy people, even if they're perhaps 10% less effective than they could be. Do you know what I mean?
And it sounds easy, the way that you describe. You built this business, you had these ideas, people just joined. Is it as easy as it sounds, or for you, did you have to at any point put in 100-hour weeks and really drive yourself?
Well, I mean, I put in 100-hour weeks anyway, because this is just, I've found what I love to do best in life. You know, I was up at 5 this morning. You saw you and I were emailing at 5:30 this morning. I'm up at 5, and I turn on the computer, and this is just what I love to do all day. And yes, I pry myself away from the computer for an hour in the middle of the day to go, you know, ride my bike and get outside a little bit, but then I usually sit on the computer doing more of this until midnight. And I don't know, is that 100-hour weeks? That's more like at least. This is just what I love to do, you know? So, I mean, again, it doesn't really feel like work. And of course, there have been some frustrating things, you know, but, I mean, again, it's like same with running a band or something. It's frustrating when the drummer decides the night before a big gig to quit, and it's frustrating when, you know, somebody at CD Baby decides to flake out or freak out or turn into an ass or something. But, you know, it's like, it's life, and you just kind of, maybe it's from working with the circuits for 10 years and a band for 5 years, but you just kind of get used to the fact that there's going to be unexpected things and chaos and personalities, and you just get used to that fact. It's no big deal.
Sounds like you're quite bold, and you've been very unconventional in building your business. What are some of the big mistakes that you've made along the way?
Mistakes. Believe it or not, I don't have any. I don't have any regrets. I don't have anything I would have done differently. I've thought about this a lot. I think the reason I don't feel there's anything I would have done differently or any mistakes I made along the way is I think it's a matter of ambition, that if my goal was to rule the world or become a billionaire or something like that, then, yeah, I would have done things differently, and I could look back and say, okay, well, I made some mistakes because I'm not ruling the world yet, and therefore I must have messed up. But since my only ambition was to do a favor for some friends and help them sell their CDs, everything that's happened since starting CD Baby, really, everything that's happened since the first year has just been a total surprise. So it's kind of like, to help put into perspective, there's an email that I sent John, who was the first employee back in 1999, when it was just him and me, and we maybe had like 50 artists using CD Baby, and we were getting maybe 10 orders a day or something like that. Like, it was really just some little kind of part-time hobby thing. And it was just me and him on two computers, two PCs in the living room. And I sent him this email one night, like after he had left, and I was just kind of thinking about the future of CD Baby. And I said, you know, man, we got to get ready, because there's a chance that someday this business might be big. I mean, we might have like 100 artists using CD Baby. We might need to get a third computer and like network the three of them together somehow, which I don't know anything about. We might need to, you know. So it was like, that was my idea of thinking big, was that we might have 100 artists and three computers in my living room. And, you know, now it's 100,000 artists and, you know, 50 or something computers. And so the entire business is just way, way more than I ever expected it to be. So it's hard to think in terms of any mistakes, because it's far beyond anything I ever expected. And so, you know, just like, you take it as it comes when everything's a surprise like that.
Yeah, how big is it now? How much in revenue, and how big's your team?
It's, I think, $25 million or something in sales. There are 50 employees, and, yeah, largest seller of independent CDs on the web. And the other stuff we haven't even mentioned yet is that 2.5 years ago, right after Apple iTunes launched their music store, a few weeks later, they sent us kind of a private invitation up to their office to talk about how to get the CD Baby catalog up and selling in iTunes. And I kind of thought that we'd just be meeting with some marketing guy or, you know, some tech guy. and Steve Jobs himself walked out in full presentation mode. Because it's funny to kind of think in hindsight, but you know, when it was that first month that iTunes launched, a lot of record labels were still actually kind of dubious that this thing was worth doing at all. And so he was in full kind of like presentation and convincing mode, saying, we really want to get every song ever recorded up for sale in the Apple iTunes Music Store. There's no reason not to. It's just digital. There's no lack of shelf space. Let's just get the most complete archive of music ever here and available for 99 cents a song. Even the stuff that's not selling too well, we don't care. Let's just get it up and available. And since, of course, Apple Computer can't deal with having thousands of musicians calling their main number asking how to do this, they wanted to work with a company like us and a few others like similar to us that would help kind of pipeline the musicians of the world into Apple iTunes. So all I had to do was say, okay. We set up our whole digital distribution program. Luckily, you know, we were already doing 90% of it already. So there was just this additional 10% where, say, we were already, the musicians were already entering all of their metadata into our database for every album and every song. And we were already paying the musicians every week. We were already digitizing their incoming CDs and scanning their album art and encoding their music into WAV files and such. We're doing all of that already before iTunes launched, just for the matter of, you know, making the CDBaby.com website. So when iTunes said they wanted us to be a digital distributor for them, all we had to add to our system, our assembly line, was to encode these files into their AAC format that they needed it to be in, and upload it to Apple's servers, and they send us the payment in one big giant chunk for all of our artists in one big check per month with a detailed report of what was contained inside that check. I just kind of had to write a program to parse out that report and add the appropriate dollar at a time here and there onto the musician's next check, which went out the following week anyway. So the cool thing was we were able to set up this amazingly efficient digital distribution system because it was just piggybacking on our existing retail system. And that's why we're able to do this for only a 9% cut. So if you know any musicians that want to get their music up and selling on the Apple iTunes Music Store, just tell them to go to cdbaby.com and they can sign up. Just send us their album and we'll take care of all of the ugly technical work of encoding it to Apple's specs and exporting the XML metadata just the way Apple needs it and are syncing it to their servers just the way they need it to be. And we take care of all the technical stuff and take no rights to the music. It's not a record deal. We're just a distributor. So we just distribute it to Apple and all of the other big online music stores like Napster and Rhapsody and Yahoo Music and all of those kind of places. And then for doing all this work, we only keep a 9% cut of whatever income is generated from their music.
So now it sounds like you're doing this and some other people are getting into it since it's kind of this really needed thing in the marketplace. How much do you think about your competition?
Actually, the cool thing is we're friends with them all. I mean, we all have different niches. There's a good company in San Francisco called IODA, spelled I-O-D-A, and their specialty is working with labels that have, you know, 10 to 20 releases on their label. And our specialty is working with individual musicians that are putting out one-on-one. So every now and then, for example, if a label with 20 albums contacts CD Baby and says they'd like to work with us, we tell them that they should also consider IODA because IODA is more set up to handle record labels. And when an individual musician with one album contacts IODA, they say you're probably better off working with CD Baby because they're more designed to work with you. So there's really not that much competition. We each have our niche, and CD Baby's definitely far and ahead the best at working individually with musicians.
How do you make the decision? I mean, it seems like it must have been tempting to say, hey, well, you know, we'll jump and we'll also work with record labels. How do you decide to not do that or pass up that opportunity?
Did you read Good to Great?
I haven't, no. I've heard I should.
Oh, you should, man. Good to Great by Jim Collins is seriously one of the best business books written in many years, and I read lots, you know. I read maybe 10 or 20 a year, and this, even though it was written 3 years ago, I still think it's one of the best things written in years. In Good to Great, there's, well, I mean, you can read your own book synopsis on what the book's about on Amazon or something, but there was this chapter called The Hedgehog Theory that talked about how all of the companies that have survived and thrived over the years and been around for, you know, 50 or 100 years, all of them had to find their niche. And the reason it's called the hedgehog theory is it tells the Aesop's fable of the fox versus the hedgehog. And everybody thinks that the fox is fast and sly and cunning and stronger, and the lowly little hedgehog only knows how to do one thing. It knows how to curl into a ball with its spikes out. But the thing is, no matter what the fox tries to do, whatever cunning trick it tries to get at the hedgehog, every time the hedgehog just curls into a ball with its spikes out, and it always wins. Because being very good at that one trick is better than 100 of the fox's sly and cunning tricks. So he applied the Aesop's fable to business and said that the companies that survive and thrive the best over the years are the hedgehogs, the ones who know their niche and specialize in it, usually even letting go of everything else, not doing anything else, not trying to dabble in other aspects and other businesses, not trying to spread out, but to just stay the specialist at this one thing. And I believed that anyway, for a different reason. You got to remember, since I started CD Baby in 98, it was really kind of before the real dot-com boom. I mean, it really started at the end of 97, you know, so it was before the dot-com boom. And during those fucking crazy times in 99, 2000, there were so many companies out there that were just this kind of fog that couldn't tell you what they do. They say, we empower end-tiered solutions, providing peer-to-peer customer solutions to help empower your driven development services. It's like, well, okay, well, what do you do? So the way that CD Baby was able to cut through that fog is I just said, we're a record store, and that's it. And people would say, so do we upload music to you, and you recommend? We'd say, no, we're a record store. I'd say, oh, so we send you a CD, and you, like, manufacture it? And we'd say, no, we're a record store. They go, oh, okay, well, do you do reviews and recommendations? We said, no, we're a record store. And, you know, you say it enough and people go, okay, I get it. And it helped a lot to be the sharp knife in the fog, you know? When everybody else is trying to be everything to everyone, we're just here saying, no, we're just a record store. And so I kind of believed this hedgehog theory anyway in my gut, just because it just helped cut through the chaos. It helps really make it clear what you're about, knowing to innovation is about saying no to most things, not saying yes to everything. But then now, I think, now that the cloud of the dot-com days are over, I still think it helps to just kind of understand what your specialty is and stick with your specialty, to drive that deeper instead of just trying to spread out and be everything to everyone. So CD Baby is still just sales and distribution for your music. I mean, I took a step back from saying just a record store finally, you know. But, I mean, we're still just sales and distribution for our independent musicians, and that's it. We don't want to work with record labels. We don't want to get into being a radio station or being a recommendation service or being a editorial reviews and all that kind of stuff. And every day we get an email a day that wants us to be something else, that says, like, why don't you guys start a... You should start a booking agency. You should book a CD Baby tour across the nation. You should start a bus with a satellite dish that would drive to neighborhoods and blah, blah, blah. You guys should start a radio station. You should start a magazine. You guys need to start a record label and pick the best of the best. You know, we get all these well-meaning suggestions every day, but, I mean, seriously, like, you know, 365 a year for 7 years, you know, you just have to say no to everything and just say, no, we're a record store.
It sounds like you almost have to rebel to be just a record store.
Yeah, I swear. And it really is. You've really got to kind of like stand firm and know what you're about and just say, it's tough to say no to everything, especially when the people who are trying to get you to say yes to something really are doing so with the most, you know, full of flattery and the best of intentions. And I think you just really got to kind of, yeah, rebelliously stand firm and say, no, we're just sales and distribution. That's all we do, and the way we're going to continue to be great at it is by saying no to everything else.
Sounds like you have a lot of control there. Do you own the whole company, or did you ever take investment to grow?
No, I own the whole company, never any investors. During the dot-com days, you kind of had to whack them off with a stick, people trying to shove money at me, and I just would, you know, shut them up and bring the phone call to a quick close before they could get too involved. I saw too many of my friends back in New York even ones that started like me, like with a good idea and passionate about what they were doing, I saw them take some investors' money, and all of a sudden it's like they lost their focus, man. All of a sudden they became their focus became pleasing their investor or showing a healthy return, and they weren't really thinking of their customers first and foremost. The thing I like about not having investors and just maintaining sole control of it is I get to do things that business-wise seem very stupid, but I know in my heart is correct. And I'll give you the most obvious example of this. When we first launched our digital distribution program, just a month or two after meeting with Apple, actually, it was like the day after meeting with Apple, I sent all of our clients an email saying we're going to do this thing. Then it was just a few weeks later that it was up and launched, and I said, okay, everybody, sign back into your account, and if you want us to deliver your music to Apple and other online music stores yet to come, just log into your account and we'll get it set up. At the time when Apple brought us to their office, we asked about the deadline. They said this is just a few weeks away. It turned out that deadline was way off, and it was like 6 months away before they were ready. But because they told me 3 weeks, I told our clients 3 weeks. And we caught all of the heat for all of these musicians that had signed up to do it, also anticipating that it was going to be a lot of work to go back and kind of redigitize and deliver their music. I was charging $40 for people to be a part of this, right? So I said, okay, for $40 additional, we will encode, deliver, do all of the legal and technical work necessary to get your music up and selling in Apple iTunes. And 5,000 musicians said yes and gave us the $40 and the permission to be their digital distributor. So we collected $200,000 from the artists and had it there in the bank. We were using it for the legal costs and the extra hardware necessary. But then, like, 5 months went by, or something like that. It was like 4 or 5 months. And Apple still wasn't ready. And we were calling them and emailing them like every day or two, like, what's going on? And they just said, oh, yeah, sorry, we're not ready. And the musicians were really starting to get mad, like thinking that this was some big scam that we had pulled on them or whatever. And I just kind of sensed that it's like this tide was turning and there was getting to be all this ill will where there was previously celebration. And I felt that, you know what, there's like, sometimes there's an ill will that's, whether it's deserved or not, can be irreversible, and let's not even get past that tipping point. Let's not go there. So what I did is, even though we had already spent like $50,000 in legal fees and almost $100,000 in hardware, I gave everybody's money back. I said, all right, everybody, I'm sorry. I know I told you that it would be a few weeks, and it's been a few months. Here's your money back. I'm really sorry that it didn't turn out the way I thought. We're still going to continue to do this, but here's your $40 back. And we refunded $200,000 back to the artists. And I swear, by some kind of fucking serendipity, the very next week, Apple said, okay, we're ready. And so the CD Baby Digital Distribution Program has been a free service ever since then. And lots of people tell me I should be charging more. But I just know that by charging more, it raises people's expectations. And the problem is that up until that point, up until we did the deal with Apple, CD Baby had been entirely self-contained. Like, you sent your CD to CD Baby, and we sold it for you. And we were 100% responsible for everything that happened. Once Apple asked us to be, like, a distributor, and all these other companies, too, all of a sudden, we were somewhat out of control. That it's just, we were just a distributor, but the end result was still in their court, whatever you want to call it. So all of a sudden, it's like I couldn't absolutely 100% guarantee the way things were going to go. I could say, we will do our best. We will send your music to them, but I can't guarantee that they will sell it. I can't guarantee that they won't go out of business next week, you know, because it's not up to us. And because we couldn't offer that guarantee, I decided to kind of lower people's expectations by making this a free service. But also, I mean, there was a slight business savvy behind that decision, because I realized that all of those legal and technical expenses we had up front, they were fixed costs. They were the same amount of money, no matter whether it was one artist or a million artists using our service. So I, realizing that, I said, well, hell, why go through all this trouble just to have 4,000 people using it, when if I make it a free service, we can have so many more using it? So I decided to make it free. I guess the other kind of, the numbers-wise way of looking at it is, since these are fixed costs, if, you know, 100 artists are using it, then I've really spent $100 per artist building this thing. But if, you know, 100,000 artists are using it, then it's really only, my cost is only $1 per client to do all the work we're doing. So anyway, so I made it a free service, and now we do have 50,000 artists using our digital distribution program, which I found out later made us made CD Baby the single largest digital distributor in the world. That I found that out from the guys at Napster told us that the CD Baby catalog is larger than, you know, the major record labels like Universal and all that stuff combined. That we've got the single largest digital catalog in the world, which is kind of an unexpected side effect, but also has a nice strength in numbers. Now there's not any legitimate music service out there that can start up, that can afford to not have the CD Baby catalog. And we make them do an all or nothing, so it's kind of this strength in numbers where anybody that has music they want to get out to the world can get it in CD Baby, and we can get them into all of the big online music services.
All the artists who are using your system, do you view them as customers of CD Baby or suppliers or partners, or where do they fit in?
We think of it, we have two groups of people that we deal with. We have the clients, which are the musicians, and then the customers, which are the people that buy music. So you could perhaps have called them vendors, but I think you know, we just call them the musicians are our clients. And the people that come to CDBaby.com to buy music are the customers. Although I guess now we have a third group, which are the partners, which are the companies like Apple iTunes and Napster and all of those that we also supply music to. So profit comes from the 50-50 kind of equally. We make about half our income from selling the music on CDBaby.com and half of the income from the musicians directly who are paying us to do everything we do on their behalf.
And when you're dealing with these clients, these musicians, what's it like? Are these people who, you know, are like entrepreneurs where they're doing their own thing, but they're responsible kind of doing what they need to do to be a part of this, or is it not quite that way?
It's all across the board, man. There's no, you can't say there's a typical person. It's kind of like, you know, we often get the question of like, what does the average musician sell on CD Baby? Like, how many CDs does the average musician sell? And we have to say, well, you know, there isn't really an average musician on CD Baby. There are so many different types. There are definitely, I mean, here, I'll kind of give you the gamut. We have people like Al Jardine, one of the original Beach Boys, or Thomas Dolby from, you know, She Blinded Me with Science. Like, people that have been famous for decades that are just choosing to put out an album directly from musician to fan and using CD Baby's system to do so. Then we have ambitious bands that, you know, have like 5 20-somethings that this is their full-time thing, and they spend every waking hour on tour, and all five of them very ambitiously pursuing a career in music. And then we have people that are, you know, say like film composers that this is their career already, and they're just putting out an album on CD Baby kind of on the side. And they're experts. They know what they've been doing. They've been doing it for 20 years, and they're just using CD Baby to sell an album directly. And then you have the total amateurs that are just, this is the first time they've ever put together an album. Sometimes they're just brilliant musicians that have just never done this before. And so we're having to kind of teach them, what's copyright? Do I need to trademark my songs? No, you copyright your songs. You trademark your band name. Well, what's a UPC barcode? You know, so stuff like that. We do handholding for the people who have never done this before. But to me, that's one of the beauties of the CD Baby system, is that it was designed from the ground up to work one-on-one with musicians, no matter where they're at in their career.
You guys are in Portland, Oregon. How'd you end up there?
I started the business in Woodstock, New York in 1998. And I'd only been living in Woodstock for a year or two. I'd kind of moved up to escape the hectic life of Manhattan. I'd been living in Manhattan for 7 years and decided to move up to quiet little Woodstock, New York. But the downside of quiet little New York, man, was like the internet was just like raging all around me. And I was up in the mountains with a 56K modem. And there was no broadband coming for years. Like they kind of very clearly told us, you know, we're not scheduled to bring any DSL or cable into this area for another 4 years. So even as CD Baby grew, it was me and John and one other guy all sharing a single 56K modem. It was slow and it was painful, but in the end it was the winters, man. I couldn't handle the winters anymore. So the upstate New York winters combined with no broadband made me kind of like pick a city on the map. And I was about to pick San Francisco until I realized what it cost. and maybe Portland. And I'm really glad I picked Portland, man, because it's a high-tech city with a low cost of living, and especially the last couple of years, has just got this incredible open source movement. You know, Linus Torvalds that wrote Linux is there, and the Open Source Development Lab is there, and it's one of the main LiveJournal and some other like great like open source built services were based there. And now with I don't know if you've heard of Ruby on Rails, the kind of development tool that's getting a lot of buzz.
Oh yeah, we just interviewed the 37 Signal guys recently.
Oh right. So Portland, for some reason, has like more Ruby and Rails programmers than like any metro area anywhere. There's just a ton of people. It's just got a really great creative vibe to it, where people seem to do things out of love, not money, because you know Portland isn't the kind of place you move to go get rich. You know, so people do things because they're interested in them, and because of that, it has this great open source community feeling to it. And we've just been really, really glad that CD Baby kind of accidentally landed there. You know, it's been great for the company.
Well, it sounds like you've done your share of rebelling, and you've been very successful. But what are you rebelling against now?
Damn, that would be such a good question to end on if I had a good answer. Man, I don't, you know, these days I feel like I'm rebelling against the crazy greed of the major labels. You know, you hear this stuff where some people feel that 99 cents per song on iTunes is too high. And now, like, Sprint announced a couple days ago that they'll be selling digital music directly into your Sprint phone for $2.50 a song. It's just like, oh, man, you know, and you know this is just like so many middleman layers of greed along the way where, you know, it's like Sprint wants to get their cut, but then so does the company providing the service to Sprint, but then so does the label, and so does the publisher. And it's like you have like five companies taking their cut in between the musician and the fan. And I guess what you could say that I'm just on, still on a constant rebellion against, is to help the musician reach those fans directly, to just kind of reducing the numbers of people in between the musician and the fan. I think in the end, the musician is happier. They're more in direct control of their career. Definitely happier on the money level, where you can make more money selling 10,000 records on your own than you can selling a million records on a record label. And I think just as time goes on, more and more musicians will realize this and opt to do things themselves instead of signing away their life to a label.
That sounds really good, and congratulations on all your success, and best of luck keeping it up.
Great, thanks a lot.
That's all for my interview today with Derek Sivers. You'll notice instead of our regular theme song, we're playing one of Derek's songs, Ready to Live. You can check out links to more of his music, CD Baby, and everything else mentioned on this interview at venturevoice.com. As always, feel free to send us your thoughts, either talk@venturevoice.com or pop onto our website, www.venturevoice.com, and leave a comment. Good to hear after the last show that a few of our listeners will be at the Podcast Expo. We look forward to seeing you there. And until next time, this is Greg Gallant with Venture Voice, entertaining entrepreneurship. I'm ready. I can finally say I'm ready to take, 'cause I'm ready to give. I'm ready. I'm ready to live. Woke in a river, baptized in the water. Woke in a river, I'm clean. They're shedding my skin, and all that petty baggage shedding my skin. I'm free, and all my debts forgotten, and all my crimes forgiven. Lighter than a feather, this is my soul. I'm ready. I can finally say I'm ready to take, 'cause I'm ready to give.
opposite there was a line so far. But here I'm past the horizon, I reached my destination. So meet me at the gates, let's play the game. I'm ready.